Hey, good morning, good afternoon.
What's going on, fellers?
Good evening and good night.
Yes.
And fourth meal, if you're Syf.
Oh, fourth meal, yeah.
I love fourth meal. Syf, how do you know this guy? What's his name that as you know him?
Ems.
Just Ems, alone. Now he added an operator to it.
I am an operator these days, yeah.
Turn the mic towards you.
I used to be a, like, I guess some people remember me, like I was a King Ems when I did what
King
you
Ems.
Did.
Yes.
When I was a radio person in the 90s, I was King Ems.
King Ems, correct.
You've always been a king.
When I knew Ems, he was living in L.A. Death Row Records or Interscope.
When you met me, yeah. Yeah.
Are you originally L.A. cat?
I'm originally from New York City, yeah.
And you're originally from New York?
A little closer, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Do I sound better now?
Yeah. So originally you're from New York, but you moved to L.A. to work for Interscope?
I moved out there with my family, and I graduated high school there. Then I started interning at record labels, which led to a job at Interscope Records eventually, and I was doing college radio. I think you did that too.
Yes. I was a DJ for college radio. Yeah.
Yes, I was too. And then my college radio gigs led me to be a commercial radio DJ in the 90s. That's a long time ago now.
Where were you a commercial radio DJ?
I worked at a station called 92.3 The Beat from in the early 90s to the late 90s.
Wow, out there.
Yeah, I did.
The very famous The Beat.
I did.
What slot?
I was a hip-hop show person.
You were a mix show guy.
I was a hip-hop show guy, yes.
What night were you on? When were you on?
I was on Friday nights. I did a show and I did interviews and played all the new hip hop music because back in the 90s, there wasn't that much hip hop on the radio.
No.
So I was kind of the guy to go to. Like, we were Friday nights, a wake up show was Saturdays, and it was hip hop weekend in Los Angeles.
Oh, that is awesome.
So I got to interview.
What years are we talking about?
We're talking about I was on radio in LA from 90 to 96.
God, what a time. What a time to have a show.
Yeah.
90?
I did. I was in my last year of high school doing college radio, you know, interviewing third base. And then 92 or 93, my talents were picked up by a paying establishment.
92.3.
Yeah.
So does that mean you Snoop did your show in those days?
Yes.
Dre?
Yes. Dr. Dre did. Grace, my
booth.
Talking
like this?
What do you mean?
I don't know. You talk like this.
Very. He said he hasn't slept at all. I said he came in. I was like, you look very high and tired. He was like, yeah, I haven't slept.
Oh.
Yeah, Dr. Dre, he graced my booth. It was hot. I liked it. He got a lot to say. Actually, he didn't come up until later in the game. He came up during the East Coast, West Coast war thing, and he had a lot to say.
And he talked on your show.
He did. I think that's the only place he ever talked about this shit. He was driving around in a limo, and he just popped up like, oh, what up, Ems? De La Soul was there, and he wanted to say hi to them. It turned into this big interview.
Do you have that?
I do somewhere.
That sounds phenomenal. De La was on the air with you.
You should put that on what we call the internet.
Yes, that should
exist.
People
would like to hear that.
People would like to see this and hear it, or at least hear it.
I do have that somewhere, yeah. I got to break that out, digitize it.
Yes, is that on a cassette?
It is on a cassette.
You're going to want to dub that as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this. You're a music guy. I would assume you would. You know, cassette's quality actually devolves over time.
Yeah.
I didn't know. You should get that up ASAP. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I think my partner, the show was done with me and a gentleman named Mike Nardone, so I think he did digitize that episode. Yes. So
Mike Nardone.
I think Mike digitized it, so I just have to get it from him. So check your email box in a few days.
Is Mike Nardone still doing college radio stuff? And didn't he go back to then doing like community? Like,
yeah, he did. No, I think he's just rocking and rolling, being a dad and
all that stuff now.
Yeah, all that grown-up stuff.
So what happened? So you stay on the air tonight till 96, and then you started working for Interscope?
No, I always worked for the labels. I started at Loud, then I worked for Interscope, and then I moved here to New York City because I wanted to come back home with an Interscope job.
When you worked at Loud, you were doing mix show?
What was I doing at Loud? Yeah, I was working DJs. I was promoting.
Out West?
Yeah.
So you were in the office with Hmong?
Nah, before him.
Before Hmong was even around?
Yeah, before Hmong. I'm talking.
So, you remember Hmong?
I remember the name. I can't think of who it is.
This dude.
I'm talking about me, Steve Rifkin, and five other people in a room like, hey, I'm starting a label. What should it be called?
Oh, you were there from then?
Yeah.
What's up, C?
What's up, Mr. C?
Yeah, we're talking to Ems.
Yeah, What's up, man? I didn't know you were recording.
It's okay. What's up? It's a podcast. You can say whatever you want. What's up? You need anything?
Mr. C!
Mr. C! What did he want? He's so weird. He's like, you're recording?
So weird, and I don't know if you ever noticed this, but if he needs something, it has to be right then.
Oh, my. What do you mean, if I've ever noticed that? That's literally like... See,
like, if he needed M's for something right now, he would come in and take M's away.
Here is it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going on air in 5 minutes. I need to record the ODB tribute.
Right. That has nothing to do with us. We don't record things.
This is right then.
And you happened to call him while he was listening.
I don't care.
No, and it was actually a legitimate reason to rush.
But no.
But he does it for everything.
No, but we have nothing to do with recording his show.
No, I know.
So why is he frantic with us?
Looking for Dominican Drew, I'm guessing.
Is he in here?
No.
Okay, so move along.
He wanted.
Hop along, Cassidy C or whatever.
He looked in. He looked around. Knew, and then just stared kind of frantically.
That is Mr. C.
That is the legendary
nasty African.
So, when Mr. C has to do a death mix, all things must stop.
Hold on, Syph. You ain't gonna sit
death
here.
Death mixes are
listen
insane.
The fact that today is ODB's death day,
yeah,
that's a major day.
Right.
In the
but
life,
any death day. He treats every death day the same.
Listen.
It doesn't matter.
What about the born days? Does
no.
He
no, he does some born day. He
some
does some born,
but it's
day.
Mostly death.
No, but he's a fan of death. We believe that C plots the death of rappers to plan that so he can do the death day mix.
And they sound great.
Because they're amazing.
No, Mr. C, January 1st. Right when after we celebrate New Year's Eve, he goes. He probably does a couple parties. Then he goes home, sleeps till like probably 5
p.m.
The next day, yep. January 1st. Then he wakes up excited to then open some kind of fresh new calendar, whatever calendar he has that year,
and mark down those death days.
And then just sit down for the entire day watching football or whatever it is he does, and marks down death days with an X.
Oh man! And he goes, you know what? Then there are the ones that are impossible. He's like, what am I going to do for Troubled T-Roy's birthday and for his death day? I don't know. I can only play Reminisce so many times.
You got to do Heavy D. You got to do Pete Rock's Hill Smooth.
What's the play in the mix, you mean? In the
door. You got to do a door.
Here's the hard part, though.
Eddie F. Productions.
Eddie F.
Good call. But here's the thing. What does he do for MC Trouble's death day? I mean, that's a tough one.
I think he just does the 3 songs and then keeps it moving.
I don't know the 3 songs.
Whatever.
And he plays the one, you know, the Fife gave him a shout.
Right, yes. The Fife shout.
Rest in peace to MC Trouble.
Get back.
A lot.
Yeah. A lot. That's 40 minutes right there. Yeah. So.
Anyway.
Shout out to Mr. C. So, you were out there doing promo with Steve Rifkin when he's first getting started.
Yeah, when it was called the Steve Rifkin Company, when that was like, if you wanted to work your rap record in Los Angeles, if you wanted to work your rap record, you would call this guy named Steve Rifkin, and he would help promote it. And then he got a label deal, and that turned into Loud Records.
And he owns the term Street Team.
Yes, yeah. We've learned that on One Epstein before.
Yes.
And now, he was in Los Angeles when the label started?
Yeah, he was in L.A.
Now is
and my high school was actually across the street from his office.
So can you tell me this?
Why is he talking like that?
I don't know why he's talking like that. I don't know. He didn't sound
this
like this.
This is like the M's interview voice.
When I saw him the other night, he didn't sound like this.
This is the M's interview voice.
I like it.
I like it too. No, listen, I'm fucking with the interview voice, all right? So,
can I just do my M's interview voice?
Yeah.
So but it doesn't sound like this necessarily when I'm doing interviews.
No, this is receiving interviews.
Yeah,
it's totally different.
Hey.
So,
Hi, Cypher.
So M's interview.
I haven't seen him in a while. This dude is married too.
Yeah, I've seen you since I've been married, but I don't see you as much as I used to know.
When did you see him?
All around.
Man,
I used to hang out, be in the industry.
When I was a hip hop person, I used to see Cypher.
Yeah,
when you were a hip hop person, you guys would bump into each other.
Now, I haven't been in this station since like Joel Ortiz's first album. I'm looking around. It says WBLS.
Weird, like, right?
Yeah. It's ill, though. It's hot. Yeah.
It's definitely interesting. So I'm a little interested by this. Who was the first signee on paper of Loud Records? Was it the Licks?
No, I think it was Tongue Twister.
It was Twister.
Really?
I think it was Twister.
I don't remember that.
I think that was the first record that came out.
That's crazy. And I have that record. It's actually not that common. It's one of the more rare
before
Before he was Twister. He was the tongue twister.
And I was on Loud?
Yeah, he got picked up because he held the record for the fastest rapper in the world.
That.
Yeah, Steve signed him.
And he had this
record. Didn't the guy who judged it was the guy from the FedEx commercial that spoke really fast?
No, I don't remember.
He judged something to do
the
with
Micro
it.
Machines?
Huh? Yeah, Micro Machines guy. He had something to do with it.
You're saying...
Maybe he beat him in the Guinness Book or something.
Either way, you think Twista and the guy from Micro Machines commercials have had some running?
Yes.
For sure. Had a battle.
Positive.
Google!
The Twista record, though, if I recall, that tongue twister record doesn't look like your traditional Loud record. It actually looks slightly different, like before they'd gotten the label to look the way...
Exactly. The headphones were not placed. The headphone band was not placed around the logo yet.
So who was next after Twista? Then the Licks? Madcap?
Madcap might have been next. Madcap, Hand Soul.
Off to a terrible start, by the way. They should have quit. I mean, it was amazing that it turned out so good.
Yeah, Madcap and Hand Soul were next, I believe.
Hand Soul?
Hand Soul. The Hand Soul Project.
What's the Hand Soul Project?
Some dude from L.A. He rhymed.
They signed him?
Yeah, he had a record out. He had a single.
Did it do vinyl or just a single?
I think it did vinyl.
Really?
I don't have it, though.
I don't remember seeing it.
Hand Soul.
If the three of us have never seen this vinyl, it may not exist.
He was there.
And you were there. So
no, I'm sure. I just don't remember what it sounded like. I remember seeing him in the office. What up, Hand Soul? I remember interviewing him. He used to come to the show.
So he was an L.A. dude. He was around.
He was an L.A. dude.
So, okay. When did someone who actually matters sign to Loud? Because the first one that mattered was the Licks, right?
Yeah, I think the first one that everyone would know outside of Los Angeles on a national hip-hop level with Alcohol.
And by the way, I don't mean this as a slight to Twista, of course, went on to be great, but at that time, it did not work out. It was not ready.
He was up and coming.
Were the Licks wilding out in those days?
They were just these real cool hip-hop dudes, the same way they are today, man.
Really the same dudes?
Yeah, real funny. And I knew them from other things because they were working with King T.
You knew King T?
Yeah. I knew, you know, I was a L.A. hip-hop radio in the clubs.
Have you ever met King T?
Yeah.
Really?
With Licks. Really? In L.A.
Yeah? Was he cool?
Yeah, he was cool. He was just, he's like another alcoholic. Like, he's just like them, from what I remember.
Listen, you know, at some point we're going to have to go on a real run of some of these West Coast legends.
I'm ready.
I know you are, but we got to go on a run.
You're going to fly out and just grab them?
Maybe we should
do the podcasts?
Like a week?
A week in L.A.?
MC8.
Yes.
King T.
Yes.
That has to get done.
I mean, I had Corrupt on my improv show, but I would love to sit and just fucking talk to him.
MC Ren.
Ren.
Got to talk to Ren, see what Ren is talking about.
A week wouldn't even be enough.
Let's do a year.
A year.
A year in Los Angeles. I think Ebro would be down for this, in that he'd hire two new people, and we would become professional podcasters, and we would live in Los Angeles.
That's how he'd be down with it.
That's how we'd live in Russell Peters' basement, and we'd do our best.
Gym every day, pool in the backyard.
It's nothing. I've lived that life. So you do the radio life. Is there a most memorable, is there anything that sticks out in that era to you? That really, when you look back at your rap life, you go, man, that was nutty.
My rap life.
Like, you remember Biggie when Biggie first came out?
I do remember Biggie. I remember interviewing him.
Early?
Yeah, first single. I remember hanging out with him in a house party when, what was that record? Party and Bullshit first came out, chopping it up with dude at a house party, and he was rhyming from the DJ booth at the house party. And then, you know, a couple months later, I'm chilling with him at the radio station, like, yo, congrats, Duke. You know, you got Juicy. And I remember promoting something, Interscope Records in Queensbridge, and I'm chilling, and I go into the bridge to go to the community center, and there's Nas and his crew. I'm like, what up, Nas? He's like, what up, Ems? What are you doing here? I'm like, we got some new records coming out, and we're going to do something in your community center. And he was just in the PJs, just being Nas. I was like,
what, brand new?
I don't think his first album came out.
How did you already know him then?
Because he was promoting Halftime. You know, he was already in L.A. promoting Halftime.
Oh, so because they still did it, you're right. But just people didn't really know him yet.
Yeah.
Like, he was still regular.
He was a regular dude. And I always remember that. Like, I go into the buildings and he's there with his people with guns.
Uh-oh. Was there a Tech N9ne on the dresser?
Nah, I didn't see that, but they were chilling in the buildings. I was like, what up, Nas?
Regular. Well, where did you grow up in New York?
I'm a Bronx dude.
Yeah.
I'm a Bronx dude.
Where about?
Man. Yeah, where?
I'm from the Northeast Bronx, kind of close to Mount Vernon.
Isn't Flex from the Northeast Bronx?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he is.
Do you know Flex from back in the day?
Yes, I do.
From how far back?
82.
Are you
82?
Oh, well, you thought he was in 89, right?
I thought 88, 89.
82? Like, he was wearing the tight fucking pants. He just posted a picture from around then the other day. It looked insane.
Nah, he was chilling. He was a cool dude, and he was nice. His name was DJ Scratch back then, if I recall.
Syfe?
I don't know that.
That predates to what your knowledge may even be.
Yeah, I don't know DJ. I never heard that.
Yeah, he was around the way. A good friend of mine was his under apartment. He lived underneath him. And
ooh.
My man Wise, Peace Wise. And I actually didn't know Get the Funkmaster Flex, my man's neighbor connection, until I moved to Los Angeles. And they were like, yo, you remember dude from upstairs on Derima? That's Funkmaster Flex. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Because realistically, the first person who was nice that I saw on turntables was Funkmaster Flex. I'm dead ass. Like, the first dude that was nice, like, wow, I can't wait till I'm that good.
Was you seeing him, DJ?
Was seeing him rock and, like, his hat in his house. Had to be 82. Like, 83, maybe. I remember, like, when Jam Master Jay dropped in Buffalo Gals, I had it. I think I had it before him, and I played him. He had BSR McDonald turntables with the joints sawed off. But money was nice in 83.
What are BSR McDonald turntables? I don't even know what those are.
Those are they kind of look like the turntables that you had when, you know, you had the stereos in the house where the shit would come down.
Right.
They were like that, but he had two of them with a mixer. I think it was a GLI mixer. They were not.
And how could you even mix with those?
That's how you learn. Like, you couldn't really spin them back.
That's how they're so nice now.
I know.
Yeah.
Because they had to use some.
Well, I mean,
bullshit.
Listen, don't get me wrong. I did it on a belt, on a shitty belt drive, but not those things. Those
this is pre.
Impossible.
This is when dudes our age didn't have SLB-100s and SLB-D1s. This is like, I want to be a DJ. I think KRS-One, you know who mentions it? Grandmaster Caz in a record. Like, I used to rock house parties with BSRs. That was like they might have been hand-me-down turntables. You got to ask Flex. Maybe his man gave it
We're
to him.
We're trying to get Flex for the podcast.
People have been asking a lot about us getting a Flex podcast.
Especially after that.
And now that he just got inducted to the broadcast, I think it's time. I think we're going to have to make the phone call.
Yeah, but in 83, dude was nice. He was nice.
He's going to be very happy to hear you say that.
That's the kind of thing that, yes, that Flex
does. No matter what happens in his life, Radio Hall of Fame,
doesn't matter.
Money, TV shows, when somebody says he's nice on the set, he's like, gets giddy like a little kid.
Not only that, it's double for him because nice on the set, and you're saying he was nice in 83.
Yeah,
he was like when Buffalo Gals came out and World Famous, he was already like.
It's amazing.
He might have already had that, you know, that move he does when he brings it back, the crossover.
Yep.
He was perfecting that then. I remember like some shit like that with the up and downs, no crossfader on his mixer. I'm dead. Like, he inspired me. Like, seeing him be nice, I was like, yo, I can't wait.
I do respect
till
his-
I get nice.
How much he's dedicated to the art of DJing.
Flex?
Yeah.
Well, that's probably the most interesting sort of dichotomy of Flex, right?
Is this day.
His biggest accusation that he gets is people call him a sellout or whatever they may say. The funniest thing is his level of commitment to DJing. And what's funny is that you mentioned those records, because the only reason to this day that I play Buffalo Gals and World Famous, because that's too old for me,
right,
is when... Is because of it was in Flex's when he would do his old school sets in the early 90s and he'd go in.
Right.
That's how I know Buffalo Gals. That's the only way I know all those records. It's from Flex.
That's funny. I saw him DJ at Sutra maybe a year ago, and he was doing that, and he was playing that set, and I was like, you're in Derima mode right now. You're in Bronx mode. You are on the block.
When he gets in that zone, that's the best. So you started, what year did you start collecting records?
Back then, like, you know, eight. My first record was probably...
For DJing, or that's just how you used to buy music?
I wanted to be a DJ back in then. I just didn't have my own set, so I would travel to my boys, bring one turntable, and et cetera, et cetera. So to me, I was already in DJ mode when I was 10 years old. Like,
you were already thinking about it.
I was already.
And that puts you at what, like 1980, like around then?
82, I was 10.
82, you were 10.
So I was already DJing at 10 years old. That's what I'm saying. Like, I was, when I would visit Flex, we would watch and be like, can we try? You know what I mean? Like,
but Flex is basically your age, right?
No, he's not my age.
Oh, no, Flex is older than you?
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. I'm trying to do the math on your side.
Not much older.
72. You're 41?
I'm 41.
Got it. And so he's a few years older. All right. That makes sense. He's like 44, 45.
He was in high school.
He really shouldn't be saying this on the podcast.
His ages?
Because as happy as he's going to get to hear somebody say he was nice in 83, he doesn't want you to say his age.
Hold on. What math?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter.
In 83, what were you, 1 year old?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He doesn't want it said. And if you never say it.
Delete!
If you never say it, it didn't happen. It
didn't happen. Even though we can agree and he'd be proud of the fact that he was DJing in 1982.
And he was older than M's, fine.
Doesn't matter. All right, cool.
Doesn't matter.
So
when I started doing comedy, Flex was like, yo, you're not up there calling me old, are you?
Oh, that's amazing. So
he's not old, man.
That's what
he's
you
wise.
About?
He's wiser.
So, but hold on, here's the thing. The crazy part to me that makes me jealous of your life. Is that you were 16 in 1988.
Yes, I was 16 in 88.
That means that your perception, like, don't get me wrong, that's when I fell in love with hip-hop, but right. I was a kid.
Right.
You were old enough to be soaking
it. I was in the clubs, like, standing next to, watching Red Alert, like, yo, all right, you know. But back then, 16, though, 88, the clubs in New York, to me, were a little ill because you had the what we call freestyle. So, like, a lot of clubs that I used to go to were mainly freestyle, and I never made it to the Latin Quarter and what's the other one? Union Square. I never made it to those. I'm a little after
that. You're a little after that, right? They were popping a few years earlier.
Yeah, I never got to that. So when I entered my club scene, which was when I was 15, 16, I was like, you know, Palladium, Red Alert, and stuff like that. But
88? You were 16?
16 and 88.
15, 16, 16 88, 88, yeah. Something like that.
So you'd still see, though, you'd still see, like, the Juice Crew in the club? Like, cats would be up in the club?
No, I missed that. I'm sorry.
You didn't? That didn't happen?
I didn't get to see that.
Saw Kane walk into a club?
I may have, yeah.
Did you ever see MC Light in a club?
I probably. In the 80s?
In the early days.
I think so.
You were going to clubs at 16?
Yeah, this is New York City, dude. They didn't ID you when I was tall. I had a flat top. It gave a couple of inches, you know? It was cool.
But you weren't, and how serious were you with the DJing already by 16?
I still didn't have my own set by 16.
Why
so
not?
I don't know, dude.
Poor?
Yeah, I was poor.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
I don't know.
No, I don't, you know, I don't know, man. It's 16.
He doesn't know why I didn't have them.
Yeah. I had records. I was DJing every week at other people's houses. I don't know why I didn't have my own set then. I was very, very, very focused on painting subway trains.
Oh, you were DJing a lot. I mean, doing graffiti a lot.
Yeah.
God, you're hip-hop. Were you breakdancing?
No, I wasn't. I was painting trains, but I was actually painting trains.
Can you answer a question that Syph and I have been trying to figure out an answer to for the last year or so? Why is it that everyone was trying to stop the poppers from popping and the breakers from breaking?
Yeah, why was that, man?
Why won't everyone just let them pop and break? This is a mystery that we want to figure out.
What record is that? Please, I forgot.
The original, Let the Poppers Pop and the Breakers Break? I don't know. I don't even know. It's just in my head.
I know. I can't even think where it's from.
It's been said more than once. There's always.
I know why.
What?
I know why. You never asked why.
But why they were stopping the poppers from
popping? Yeah, because it looked like they were
fighting. You said
fighting.
That last time. You said that you said it appears like fighting.
Look, if they're fighting or dancing, it still looks menacing when fucking 40, 50 kids in tracksuits come downstairs into the train system. It's now you're like, oh, there's about to be a dance battle. Let's go check it out. Like,
yeah,
they're still yelling, cursing, fucking getting in people's faces. You walk down the steps, you're like, oh, shit.
That was then. But now, those same people, like, the version of them now might join in. Like, yo, I got these moves, too. I got Just Dance 72.
Yo, listen, I would do anything... I would do anything in life for there to be a situation, maybe where we're if we get to ever act in something where a scene could happen in which I come out and I just get to go, somebody just let the poppers pop and the breakers break, for God's sake.
Now you got me messed up. Like, what record is
that
from?
I'm going to look it up right now.
Because it's on the tip of my tongue. Let the poppers pop and the breakers break.
That's because you remember when these records were coming out.
I do, man. I'm sure a lot of your guests do. Like, you know, you guys cover the whole...
Yeah, but I don't care about them.
Gamut of hip-hop.
Yeah, but you're more interesting to me because in the age sense, because you're a DJ.
Yes.
So, especially because I just did your party this week, so I'm constantly comparing myself and thinking about what you guys have and what you do and what you know. And so it's interesting to me. Let the poppers pop and the...
It's something like 86, 87, man. That's what I'm
that
thinking.
Late?
Yeah, maybe 85.
Oh, by the way, so the Urban Dictionary, let the poppers pop and the breakers break. Rap. Mwah. Double Trouble. No, that's the Roots. That's not it.
Nope.
King of Rock.
Yeah, it's King of Rock. Exactly.
So you were pretty right.
No, I was wrong. That's 83. I mean, 84.
84, right?
Yep. King of Rock, Run DMC.
You were close, though.
Let the pop.
I would have thought it was 82. So, I did M's party the other day. M's does a lot going on right now. He has the Mobile Mondays party.
And my man, you did a very good job, man.
Thanks,
man.
Thank you. It was all right?
I was very impressed. Because what happens is a lot of DJs come up and they do their first 45 set and it's not planned out. And they're just like, I'm just going to do what I do. I play Serato every week and I'm really good and I get paid a lot of money. And I'm just good every time I DJ. And I've got some 45s. I'm going to put them in a box and I'm going to put them in an order. Then they play them and they're like, oh, wait. I can't scratch. I can't spin them back. I don't know where my cues are. There's no cue button. And we're all looking at them like, what happened? But it wasn't like that with you. It was like you had your medleys. It was hot. Thank you.
Thank you. I was super stressed out about, as I said to Saif, I was like, I kind of just signed up to go do this party that I'm excited to do, but I feel like everyone's going to be watching to see what I can do. So it was really fun for me because I've been so obsessed with the 45s. And then when you guys reached out, I was like, this is a cool way for me to... when I started in August or August collecting them, I was like, I'm not going to leave the house with these things till November at earliest.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing.
And it worked out really nice.
Yeah.
And it's been fun. And here's the weirdest thing, though, Saif, about DJing with 45s. When you're with Serato now and you're at a club and you're listening and a DJ plays a record and it comes off, you're like, that's just tight. I should play that. In this situation, I'm leaving, and the DJ who's on after me, the queen of the 45s, what's her name again?
DJ Natasha Diggs.
Natasha. So Natasha's playing, right? She's ill. And it's not just going, oh, I should play that. It's going, fuck, I don't have that.
Yeah. Yep.
And it takes you back to another time.
Yes.
And him and I would just have this, Ems and I had this whole conversation about the joy when the main part of me, it's not even necessarily about with the 45 specifically. It's about the excuse of getting back into.
Okay, yeah. What is the obsession? What is the point of your Monday party?
I actually started the party because I was falling off in my eyes as a DJ, and what I was missing was the actual part of DJing that has left us. I'm going to buy records.
Yes.
I'm finding new music. I'm playing. I'm actually going to the store and I'm picking up the record.
Yes.
I'm
not. We all used to love.
Yes. Love. Yes. I still make beats and I stopped doing that for a minute. I was like, I'm the blog dude now. I'm digging on iTunes. Like, my life completely changed. Everything I loved, not everything, but a lot of things that I loved about DJing, making music, making beats, stopped when Serato came in. Like, I'll be dead ass honest. I sold 95% of my 12-inch singles.
No.
I don't have them anymore.
How do you feel about that now?
How do I feel about selling my records?
My lunch is here, guys.
Yes.
I miss...
My lunch is here.
Shit.
I miss a lot of them, but obviously I miss them because I'm rebuying everything on 45 now.
So that's another... That's an interesting factor for you,
yes,
though, as to why the 45 thing must have been appealing.
Yes.
Because you're like, all my vinyl's gone.
All my hip-hop records are gone. All the classic...
You didn't even save one copy of each, or...?
I kept all the rare 12-inch singles.
Why? Why would you sell your records?
Because
I'm disgusted with you right now.
Because I didn't think that I was going to play them. I was drinking that water.
You were believing what everyone was saying.
Yes.
You can play them in your house.
Man, my records are in storage. They're not being
played
in the house.
That's the thing. They are. That, like, my,
I live in Manhattan.
And right, and your stuff, like you, a lot of stuff, your stuff's in Jersey. Like, you don't necessarily have access to it, so it's like, I could see it.
Yeah, I want to.
Me too, but you and I are holding on.
I want
to
play my records for my son.
I know, we're holding on to the dream.
When is that dream really going to be fulfilled, though? That's the question.
And so that's what you had started asking yourself. You're like, what am I doing?
The funny thing
this?
About me is that most dreams of mine have come true, so
but, yeah.
I'm going to stick to it.
No, but he means how long, and that eventually you're like, if you know.
You ain't a spring chicken, brother.
That doesn't affect playing vinyl.
All right.
What does your age have to do with playing records for your children?
All right.
You didn't want to play records for your daughter. He didn't care.
I still have all my LPs.
Don't take out your anger on Scythe that you sold these 12 inches. And you did keep the LPs.
I kept all my LPs are intact. I still, you know, they're
okay,
there.
You just did the 12 inches.
I just did the 12 inches because I was like, this is DJ music, and I have them because I bought them to play out to parties.
And I have the part. Okay, that I understand the logic how you could end up doing that.
Yeah.
How did the 45 thing start?
Is it because they're rare?
Check it out. Here's how it really started. I was Twitter.
Check it out.
Twitter was just getting in, and I was like, what's this Twitter shit? And I saw DJ Spinner and DJ Scratch posting pictures of 45s. And I was like, yo, I still got all my 45s. That's hot. I want to post records, too. So I went to storage, pulled out. I started posting. I was like, oh, shit. People are in this 45 thing? They're bringing out their 45s again?
What kind of stuff do you have?
What did I have?
Yeah.
I had all the Ultimate Breaks and Beats originals on 45s. I mainly had stuff that only came on 45.
Got it. Okay.
But I had a lot. Like, I had boxes and boxes. I was doing all 45 sets in the 90s.
Oh, wow. In the 90s.
Why? Because 45, a lot of times, had different versions.
There were music that didn't come on 12-inch, and back then I had what I called to him, he had it too. It's a big-ass case with three rows, yeah. And it fits a lot of records. Mm-hmm. So I could put that in a truck and just go do a gig.
And right. You have that
a
lot.
Instead of the 10 crates of records.
Got you.
Because if it was a guest set, and it was a show-off thing. It was a show-off thing.
And you
like,
had rare shit.
I got rare shit, and I got it off.
And you have to have hand skills.
Yeah.
You have to be delicate and light with your hands to be able to cut on the 45s.
To be able to cut.
Why does Biz have 45s? Because his hands are monstrous.
That's the same reason, and Biz is one of the reasons why I did a 45 set, and I was like, let me just put them all together in DJ form, because I saw him do it, and it looked appealing. I was like, yo, he's killing it. With the way he DJs, he's rocking, and he's doing it with all 45s, and he's got one case, and he's killing it. The crowd loves it, and it looks cool.
And by the way, I even the night Biz did your party, I was there, but I left early because it was so late. I just came to see him and pay my respects and then like dip and hear the openers, and then I dipped.
Yeah.
He is the same way, though, that he DJs 12-inches. Like, it's not – Biz isn't like a pretty DJ. He's not a party rocker.
He's on the mic. He's playing a record. He's looking at whoever the DJ is he wants to impress in a room. He'll play something rare and go, he's Biz Markie. You ever think about what Biz has done for hip-hop?
Yes.
I'd like you to express what
you – Do you realize that he had his hand in Rakim? He had his hand in Kane. He was like one of the first dudes with an ill production company. He's going to go down. Like, it's going to be like Russell Simmons, Rick Rubin, Marley Marl, Biz Markie. Like, when we start looking at achievements and things that he's done.
He's like one of the first guys that got sued, too, for sampling.
Yeah. And it's 2013, and he's still out there.
Active.
Doing parties for
Rich.
30 grand. On tour with Yo Gabba Gabba. He's that dude,
and
man.
Doesn't try to cling to being current at all. He just is.
He just is. He's Biz Markie.
Yo, and then when you know him and you know how much he cares. I mean, Biz, he's what got me kind of stressed about the party. Biz called, I guess maybe someone told him, and he called me like 2 weeks ago, and he's like, yo, Saturday afternoon's here on the house. I heard you doing the Mobile Mondays. I was like, yeah. He was like, what you gonna play? I was like, yo, Biz, I was already kind of stressing out, man. I really needed my hero calling me up, one of my heroes, to tell me what I'm going to play.
But how good did you feel, though? Oh, you're like, this is Biz Markie on the phone. That's why I'm on the radar.
Yeah, no, of course. I felt incredibly blessed that person, that he cares enough to call me and say that. But I'm like, fuck, Biz. And I'm like, why? What do you think I should play? He's like, nah. And he goes, listen, man. He goes, you're Peter Rosenberg, all right? Everyone knows you from the radio. They think you're funny and blah, loud, blah, blah, blah. They don't think you know shit about records. No one knows you know your shit. No one knows that I met you when you were 14 years old.
All right.
Blah, blah, blah. He's like, when you walk in there, he goes, you're going to be a pretty bitch with big tits and a fat ass. All you have to do is show up and play some records and people are going to be impressed.
There you go.
And then I was like, well, I'm going to do more than that. It was a good confidence builder because I understood what he meant.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that I have a history with real music.
Yeah.
They just know I'm a talker. Yeah. So once they see me play one record, they're like, oh, okay, how cute, he can play. So then the fact that I've taken it so seriously and I've been such a nerd,
yeah,
when I sat down and looked back at the records, I was like, oh, I'm overprepared for this. I was like, and then I said to my wife, I was like, it's amazing. Preparation. I don't do it anywhere else in my life. Preparation's phenomenal.
I have to prepare every Monday. I have to go through records because I love it. Like, I buy records every week still. I go through it, and 90% of the time, the records that are in my bag this week are not the records that were in my bag last week. It's
fun. Do you
have
some mainstays that always stay
over? Yes, I do have a couple. But because there's so many of us rocking every week, you know, my sets are not that long.
How long do you guys each play for?
We do 30 minutes back to back.
And then if there's a special guest, you give them an hour.
Yes.
And everyone else just is a half hour.
Yeah, just back to back, whoever's there.
Who's the illest? Who's the illest with the 45 game that you've seen? Overall and at the party, if you want.
At Mobile Mondays, I think I'm the illest. I'm just going to say it.
If you do say so.
I'm just going to say it. I think that I'm the illest.
Why? Because of what you have or because of what you choose to play?
The way I play it. Because I'm always in nerd mode with the medleys, and it's always making sense, and it's smooth, and I play a lot of weird shit. I don't play necessarily for the party crowd that often. It's good and bad.
Well, no, but what I found really cool about that party, though, and obviously it wasn't a huge crowd for my night, but what I found really cool about it was the setup of the place is such that you can dance, and people can start dancing.
Right.
But people can also just be drinking their drinks and head nodding, like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
It's not like you don't have to just come and say, I'm going to play all dance records.
Right.
Which is what I was stressing about a little bit, because I'm like, a lot of these samples I have, like Curtis Mayfield Total record, Mace record.
Right. Reach out of the, not whatever it's called.
Whatever the fuck it's called.
Darkness.
That's
something.
Not. Yeah. Reach in the darkness. Whatever it is. You're not really gonna dance to that record.
Right.
It's just a doom, din, 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 and you just want to get people to react before you go to something else.
You're gonna be real happy when you hear it. Like, that's that.
That's the thing. People get really excited. And it's funny. The party suits me well too, because I was always a little bit too nerdy of a DJ for regular DJing.
Right.
I play records in mixes consecutively that make sense, and they have some sort of order.
Right.
And, by the way, could you have gotten a louder food to eat than the fucking rock hard broccoli? People are going to be like, Syph, there's 15 minutes of broccoli.
I asked my intern to get me food from downstairs. He brought me the noisiest salad ever.
I mean, it's a salad.
Cypher's like, I don't have any 45s. I don't really give a fuck, but this food is mad good.
This is a delicious salad. Who has the illest collection that you know of?
Wow, there's a lot, man.
Biz, Just, Scratch.
Scratch, Kenny Dope.
Sure, Kenny Dope's is stupid.
Spinner. Cut Chemist.
Cut Chemist.
Yes.
I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
Peanut Butter Wolf?
I don't know him. I mean, I met him, but I don't know what he has. He hasn't played the party, but Cut Chemist is
kind of stupid.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
The weird thing is with the 40...
Sorry, who's Cut Chemist again?
Cut Chemist is an L.A. DJ. He's incredible. He's in a band. He is in a band called Jurassic 5.
Oh, Jurassic 5.
He's
okay.
One of the two in Jurassic 5.
Got it.
Two DJs.
Cut Chemist actually is one of the reasons why hip-hop DJs are playing 45s and doing 45 nights.
Yeah, right? It comes from him too, right?
Yeah, because him and Shadow did that mixtape and live tour, Brain Freeze.
Where it was all 45s?
It was all 45s. And if you're really interested in DJing on 45s and you want to see the best do it, Google that.
Brain Freeze.
Cut Chemist, DJ Shadow, live at the El Rey Theater. I mean, they were doing things like live looping with putting tapes on the 45s, using foot pedals, and they're back-to-back on stage. It's complete nerd.
That sounds ill.
I'll
check that out.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there.
Most of us aren't.
Yeah, we're just going to play good songs.
To see that that's what people are doing. It was like turntablism on 45s.
It's bugged, though, man, because like there's certain things with the 45s that do drive me crazy. Like just, you know, to fuck with me, will just send me shit sometimes. They'll just send me pictures. And I'm trying to tell them, like, some of these things you have on 45, there's no evidence they exist. So you're making it hard for me. When he shows me a copy of I Just Want to Love You on 45, I'm like, I don't have evidence that exists if it wasn't for you. There's no online. You cannot find that. There's not a listing of it somewhere.
You got to talk to Just Blaze about that. Who is supposed to be here?
I know. Who is supposed to be here? But don't worry. He'll get his turn. There's something he tells me not to talk about. He'll be like, don't tell anyone. I'm like, what do you mean?
No shit, man.
He does want you to tell, right? It's like, tell everyone. I think he has Stan. Eminem. I've never seen, there's only one Eminem record that I ever see on 45. Ass like that. You see everywhere. They made a promo.
No, there's a promo 45.
Okay, here we
with
go.
With Bailamos on one side and My Name Is on the other side.
Did your wife give you that record?
No, that is some European only. And there is a Stan 45, a real one.
There's a real Stan 45.
There's a real Stan and there's a real My Name Is with Bailamos on the other side.
Bailamos!
Is that on the other side?
The Interscope shit?
Yeah, it was like a 45 for jukebox only because I think like
they were just somewhere
there were still jukeboxes with 45s.
Oh, okay, here's the question I have for you. Two questions. One, I wish I could figure out the science behind what happened between getting the records from the label to the jukeboxes. I don't know who did that job. I don't understand I don't have any knowledge of it. That's what makes it all a little bit of a mystery too, right?
Right. I think it was a different department.
But no one really seems to know.
Yeah.
Like when you
it doesn't exist anymore. So.
That too. So it has to be things that people would remember from the 90s.
Maybe the 90s, but like 94 or something, they stopped making 45s, 93.
No, but they go up till...
Not really.
They go up till 2000, but you mean for sale in stores or
anything? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't...
Because I guess till 2000, it was strictly just jukeboxes.
Yes, there's the jukebox ones. Okay, then here's another question. If there is a rare... We're talking about a rare one, right?
Yes.
If there's a fairly rare 45, let's say it goes in the range of $100 to $200.
That's not a rare 45.
Okay, you wouldn't even consider that rare.
No.
Okay, perfect. So how much, one that goes for $100 to $200, how many copies would you think exist of that?
2,000.
Okay. And then, so you're talking about even a record like Special Ed, I Got It Made.
Yes.
That's not a rare record to in a whole grand scheme of things.
You don't consider that rare?
No.
In hip-hop, do you consider it rare?
I consider it rare, yeah, for the hip-hop 45 DJs.
Well, you know why it also seems rare? Is because the era that it exists and the level of song that it is, you'd think it would be common.
Yeah. I think that a lot... That's a hard one, though. Because that's a record that you could... If you were buying 45s back then or whatever, you could probably find it.
Right.
But there's 45s that you couldn't even find back when they were out. Soul records, jazz records, reggae records. Like there's a lot of it's not just us that
care. I know
there's the big culture.
Well, do you have Nautilus on 45?
No, there is no Nautilus on 45.
This is gonna be, guess where I'm gonna go with this. Guess who says there is one?
Biz.
Yes,
you gotta ask Biz about that. I've never seen it. I have no recollection of it.
Because I've looked for it. I assumed it would exist. It did not.
I've never seen it. So it might be because
it wasn't
there's
a single, right?
It wasn't. I've never seen a Nautilus 12-inch, a Nautilus 45.
There's a reissue fake Nautilus 12-inch.
Yeah.
Yeah. with Nautilus and what's the other big one from right then on the other side?
Mardi Gras.
And Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is on 45, though?
Yeah.
Mardi Gras is on 45.
Two or three of them, yeah.
Two or three different ones.
Yeah.
Not terribly rare?
$100, $200.
In that range. What's your rarest 45?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you have any that are worth more than $1,000?
No, I do not.
The high end would be like $500?
My high end is probably like $100, $200.
You don't go deeper than that? You don't try to...
If I have them, I don't know that I have them because I didn't buy them because, yo, this is going to be a crazy rare record.
Nice.
You just put it up next to you so I can see you both together.
That's hot. Who is that?
That's Lonnie Liston Smith.
That's hot. He look cool as hell, though.
Yeah, he did. It's a compliment.
He's chilling. Yo, there is a hat, though, that looks similar to that I saw on a Polo website. I'm definitely copping that.
Yo, that hat's Mad Marvin that you're wearing today, too.
Yeah, it's just my new look, man.
I respect it. I
like it. And I want to say one thing, too. I started the Mobile Mondays party because half of me wanted to be an asshole, and I wanted to make sure that everybody played with me was a dedicated DJ because, you know, you start... Well,
that sounds like more of a dedicated record collector.
No, DJ.
But I'm a dedicated DJ. I don't have 45s.
No, it doesn't mean that you have to... That everyone who doesn't do it is a dedicated DJ. But if you're going to do it, you have to be dedicated.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that's a serious thing. If you have 45s, then...
I could do a reggae set.
45.
I wish you would.
My reggae 45 set is incredible.
I wish you would. Your man Max Glazer did it and tore it down.
He paid all reggae?
Yeah, tore it down. Our reggae set? Come on, that's...
Phenomenal.
Yeah, killed it.
Sai, did I even tell you about the store I went to the other day?
No.
I was just looking up record stores, and I saw one in the Bronx, and I went up there, and it was this Jamaican...
Where?
Mom and pop shop.
You went to Moody's?
Yeah.
Moody's, that's a big store. Did you go downstairs?
First, Gun Hill Road?
Yeah. It was Moody's, and downstairs was closed.
Oh, they closed?
No, not permanently. They were like, something happened downstairs. I was like, okay.
Flood? Flood?
That's what I was assuming, but...
Flood of blood.
Yeah, I know.
Shower posse.
I know, but just say it was a flood. So I go up there. So downstairs was closed. So I had to go in through an apartment building and like cut over to the upstairs part or whatever. And I ended up copping a few reggae records. That's all they had.
You didn't go into the store. You only went into upstairs where they have the CDs.
Yes.
Oh, man. You missed it. You would have been losing your mind.
But do they have good shit in there?
They have thousands of 45s. So you went upstairs.
So they told me that, and I was like, do they really? Because when I call up, they're like, yo, man. I was like, you have 45s? He's like, yeah, man. Yeah, man, we got 45s. I was like, he was like, come on, there's Moody's. We have everything. I was like, okay. So I just went up there, and the downstairs was
drove
closed.
Drove up to the Bronx?
Yeah.
By yourself?
Yeah. I texted my wife. I said, I'm going to a place called Moody's. If I die, this is the last place I'm going. I just didn't know where I was going. I was just
You should have scooped me on the way. I'm in Harlem.
So there's good shit up there.
There's a lot of records, man. My reggae knowledge is not that up to par, so I was
They have non-reggae 45s?
Yes.
There's all kinds of shit in there.
Yes, but there's so many that you got to be in a mood to...
To go in.
Going in, because down... You went... There's three levels. There's the upstairs where there's the CDs. It looks all pretty. And then there's downstairs in the store, which is a lot of vinyl. Then there's downstairs in the basement. And it's like, oh, boy.
A lot of shit, huh?
A lot of 45, man.
All right, Mom. We need to go back to Moody's.
Yes.
Okay, Ems, real quick, tell them also about your about the Adidas thing.
Yeah, see, this is my, you know, what I do. I'm a hip-hop person, so I collect sneakers. And I did a project with Adidas where they gave me my own shoe, and I'm wearing it.
Oh, you wore it? You wore it?
I did. And peep that, guy. Look.
Hold on. Take it off.
That's what I do. You see the 45 adapter on the shoe.
On the shoe. Pon the shoe, if you will. Let me take a shoe. Hold on. Don't move. Just stay just like that you are. Take a look at that, because that shit's pretty tough. Hold on. We can't.
It's kind of tight.
Yo, that's mean. So they just...
I want to piss you guys off.
How could you?
And just be like the...
45 spoiler? Just come in every once in a while, be like, look at this one.
No, like, you know when we were coming up, I want to be the commercial 45 DJ.
You mean you want to funk flex this?
Yeah.
No, a lot of DJs do come to Mobile Mondays and be the commercial 45 DJ.
No, but I don't even.
No, you wouldn't even go to Mobile
Mondays.
Go
to Mobile Mondays.
No, he wants to.
Like, I want to start my own party and play nothing but commercial hits on 45.
There's a lot of them in the United States.
Parties like that?
Of course. Because that's when people start, hey, I want to be a 45 DJ.
And they have the common shit.
Yeah, they, but what Prince, they, Kiss,
oh,
Madonna.
They do all the 80s records. Got
yeah.
I was about to say.
What did you do that night? You never told me.
What I played?
Yeah. What was your set like?
It was like, it was what I do. It was taking, started with, I think, Soul Records. I don't remember which one I played first, surprisingly. Maybe I played Keep Rising to the Top, maybe? Yeah. I played Keep Rising to the Top.
Keep Rising to the Top first.
And then Smooth Operator.
Yep.
And then Wrath of Cain. And then Symphony, and stayed in, like, I just went. So I used the soul records and the R&B records to get me to a hip-hop place, and then I would merge the hip-hop and then use that to get back to soul and play samples. So it was just going into hip-hop. Yeah, right. I didn't do, like, an 80. I had funk, which it wasn't samples, just records.
What's funk?
Parliament, Funkadelic.
Zap.
Yeah, the.
Computer Love?
I didn't have Computer Love. I had Call Me and BT Express and just random shit like that. I had it there, but I don't know them that well.
Right.
So I was like, what I really want to do, if I can, is stick to my shit. Right. And then the shit that came off the most was the shit to me that was the most basic. Like when I did the Kanye and Jay-Z, the only Kanye and Jay-Z I have on 45 is Otis in Paris.
Right.
So I played Otis.
Have that.
Yeah. I eventually got it. You remember that thing.
That's a dope 45.
Well, yeah, the first day I ever went shopping for 45s. First day ever.
You found it?
Found it.
Took me a minute.
Well, hold on. This is the funnier part. Yeah. It was $30.
Because you had to buy the CD.
And I go, $30. I'm not paying $30 for a 45. So I leave. A week later, I see Just Blaze. He mentions the 45. I was like, oh, I saw that, but it was $30. He was like, yo, that record's already going for $75. What are you doing? And so I had to then find it on eBay for $47. I got it for $47. Felt all right, but I lost it for $30. So I played Otis, and then off of Otis, did a whole bunch of, I did J samples.
Okay.
The winner out of those, I thought, was, and I couldn't really see the crowd that much because I was too focused, but was the What More Can I Say shit.
You were just like this?
I was just like going.
Not both of them. That and the...
Heart of the City?
Heart of the City were
so
both.
I played Heart of the City. I played
And that was a smooth. That was a smooth transition, I must say.
Oh, thank you. So it was just like...
Well, there are also a lot of not smooth transitions because I've heard him DJ before and sometimes it sounds like a truck crash.
Everything wasn't sewn together... You know,
I didn't take any risks though.
I'm just fucking with you.
No, 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 you're not. Sometimes it can be,
but
a car.
It wasn't offensive.
Not
at
a car
all.
Crash.
It
not
wasn't
a truck crash.
It wasn't a truck crash.
It wasn't offensive at all, and he wasn't trying to necessarily, because to me, a real train wreck is when people are mixing two records
that
together at the same time, and it's like he didn't do that. He was doing some slams, so it was never offensive at all.
No risks. I did about three blends.
And what was the, how long did you play?
An hour. And then I thought, you know what else part I thought really won well? The SWV Mariah spot.
Yep.
I played the Right Here Human Nature mix into Anything, into Mariah Carey and ODB.
All this on 45?
Yeah.
Yep.
Where are you getting this disposable income from?
I don't spend that. I don't buy anything else. So, like, those aren't all expensive. Mariah Carey was $1. SWV was $6. You know, like, it's not that much if you look all the time. Like, but don't get me wrong, I spent some money on 45.
That's what I'm saying. You just said you spent $47.
Yeah, man. It's a.
But that was the most expensive.
It's an expense.
Well, I don't mind because I used to spend a lot of money on records
that you don't ever spend anymore.
See, and that's the.
I spend on other stuff, though.
Right.
That's the thing, too. Like, that shows dedication. The records that we play, we bought.
No, it's
we
why.
We didn't download
it's
them.
It's why DJing and music was better back in the day because you had to really care to be a DJ.
Yes, you have to carry your records.
You get your paycheck and spent 2/3 of it on records.
Yes.
Every week.
Yes.
All the time.
New shit came out every week.
Yes.
And sometimes you'd be like, fuck, I gotta do a party tonight. I don't have enough money. I'll get one of these and then hopefully I'll get a double later on down the line.
Yep.
But you wanna play that song tonight.
Had to play it. And you're like, I'm getting $500 tonight. I'm gonna spend $200 at the record store.
$500 back then?
Yeah, not $500. I wasn't getting $500. So
when we were buying records?
Buying records, $500. Nah,
that's like, hey!
No. I was getting $200 from Flex.
$200, right. And then you'd spend
$35 from Cap if he didn't drink the money away.
So then you, and how much did you spend at the store on that night?
$235
at the store. But that's the point.
Beat Street, Brooklyn.
So that's the, and I was ordering from Beat Street. Never well stepped foot in there, but I did order from there. Here's the thing. So that's the thing with the 45s too. Every record there's care. Like either I paid a good piece for the record I bought, or I spent hours looking for them. Like this weekend, the last thing I did, I went to South Carolina this week with my wife to visit her brother-in-law, to visit my brother-in-law, her brother. I of course, flew into Charlotte and drove. Yes, it was too expensive to fly into Charleston, but also I wanted to stop in Columbia and hit some record stores.
Why? And it's better there?
They have a few spots. I didn't know. They had a few spots. And I spent, you know, the first thing in the morning on Saturday because my wife wanted to go see her brother, obviously. So in order for me to go, I had to wake up early by myself and just go to the store before she kind of got her day started. Otherwise, she'd kill me. I mean, she's supportive, but to a degree.
Yeah, bringing your girl with you to go record shopping is the worst.
We've
all done it, though.
No, no.
Of course, you have to.
And then on the way back to the airport, I stopped at the spot in Columbia. I read about it. It sounded very good. I walked in. I found the 45s. It was up above the records. They had like basically shoebox-sized boxes. And there were about 25 of them all along the thing, filled. And I looked at them, and right away I could tell these are soul records. There is good shit in here. There's going to be good shit. I have about an hour. They're 25 cents a piece for everything.
Wow.
So I need to get through as much as I can. And my wife just sitting there, and she was fine. She didn't say a word, fortunately, although we almost missed our plane. And then I would have never heard the end of it. So I was like, but I got to get through as much as I fucking can. And I ended up, and then it's the worst deciding which box. You're like, I don't have time for both these boxes. Let me look for this box. Let me just look at a couple and see if the vibe looks good.
So what did you find? What is the choice gem you pulled out of those boxes that day?
For 25 apiece, I'd buy just.
But that's the thing. And then at the end when I bought them, I'm like, they told me the total? And I'm like, what was I even thinking? I got up, the total was $23. But that's 100 records for my bag. It's still a lot. And I'm trying to be careful about, I don't want to just have everything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep my shit. Like, some of those ain't going to make it. Right. They made it out of South Carolina, but they're not making it.
Right.
Some of them I would go look on Who Sampled later, and I'd be like, it was an artist I thought might be good. And I'd look, and I'd be like, no one's ever. This is, a lot has just been sampled. This is not one of them. If I listen to it and don't love it, it's not going
to
make it.
You could give it to me.
You'll take those?
If it's a sample that you don't know who it was, I might not have it. Yeah.
No. But if I'm saying, if I know there is no sample for it, and I look and listen, it's still not very good. Because, you know, you'll take a record like someone like George Benson or someone, right? I'll take a guess, but it could be the wrong era for them. It's like, right. This was late.
We got to get you a record player.
I have one.
Okay.
I need my mini record player. I got to bring that back. So what was the gem? I would say the gem was potentially Grover Washington, the Rock This Funky Joint shit.
Grover Washington. You mean War?
War Slipping Into Darkness.
Great record.
Or Grover Washington, because I got them both.
Darn it.
Yeah.
Mr. Magic. Yeah. Mr. Magic.
It's just a hot record.
Period.
I don't care how it's played.
No, they're both those records are just fucking
amazing.
Good records,
those
right?
are records that you need. Where'd you get that Keep Rising to the Top domestic pressing? Kenny Burke.
That was an eBay, I think.
Okay.
I mean, that's buy it now. I think it was a drop, just suck it up. I saw it for like $20 and just did it.
Gotcha.
Is the domestic one not that common?
No, that's not a common record.
Really?
Not to me. That's a $25 record.
Nice. I was so happy. It's the first record I play, and Ems comes and looks at it, and is right. like, oh, shit. And I was like, yes! Score! Pulled one out.
Yes, star.
That shit in the beginning, like, the dude.
I don't think it does.
That's the only right? thing I don't like about it. And you might think it's hotter because you could cut.
No, I don't think it's hot. It's hotter because people go, oh, that's the one without
the thing.
Just different.
But the thing is, because on 45s, a lot of records aren't that great for cutting, I like having some that have shit like those
right.
chimes at the beginning because you could just kill the bass and let it come in. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you can just play like that, and you can't with that. You got to kind of give it a little devump.
So now that you're in this vinyl 45 world, are you happy? Or has it like changed your view on DJing?
Well, listen, I'm back.
You're back.
My life, when I got to New York, don't get me wrong. When I go home to Maryland, I still stop at this one store in College Park every time I go home, basically, and I'll buy 10 records. That happens 4 or 5 times a year. But that's compared to back in the day when 2-3 days a week I would sit in record stores. Now, I probably don't have time. At first, I was doing that. Now I'm probably down to just like once, twice a week. If there's a record fair, I always go. But the joy it brings me is just fucking immense. And then at home with my wife, I sit around playing her records and she loves it. Like, we just hang out.
Amazing.
In my room,
but you got past step one, though, and I'm very proud of you and I'm impressed. Like, you bought the records and then you actually went out and played them, because that is even a bigger joy than buying them.
It really is. It was, I'm not going to lie, I was high. I was high, Scythe. It wasn't like playing Serato. It was not like having a good night with a Serato night.
No, just forget it.
What, you're going to be disrespectful?
No, I wasn't.
You're going to shit on me.
No, I'm not. I wasn't. My whole point is see how I don't shit on you, but everything I love, you shit on me.
How is that my point. How is that possible? I'm so supportive of UCB. I'm supportive of everything you do. You don't think I am?
No.
Are you joking?
No.
So you take my sarcasm when I make fun of it as dissing it?
You take it past sarcasm.
What do I do? Oh, this is great now for one. I've seen you.
No, we don't need to.
Come on. Ems doesn't mind.
No, I'm listening.
No, I like this better.
Well, hold on. But I'm very appreciative of your support. So I would hope that you know that I am sincere with your love of improv. If I mock it, it's because I'm white and nerdy. So I will inherently make fun of things that are white and nerdy. But I fucking love your obsession with it.
What's the question?
What do I do that's unsupportive?
I'll tell you on another one. No, not unsupportive. That's not the right term. Not unsupportive.
Well, but like...
Just like...
Dismissive.
It's like, I love when people are passionate about whatever they love.
Right.
You only like when people are passionate about what you love. And when people are passionate about other things, you make fun of it.
But that doesn't mean I don't like it. I do. I love your passion for improv. How could I not make fun of it? In the world that we exist, it's amazingly random. It has to be made fun of.
I don't care about making fun of it.
But no, then the other part that you think, I think, and I could be wrong, maybe I've done things that are different, could still be you taking what I'm saying sort of personally when you shouldn't.
No, I don't take it personal.
Well, not personal, but thinking that I'm shitting on it when really I'm not.
Oh.
I don't.
Maybe.
I think it's been nothing. I love seeing how passionate you are. But I guess it's also maybe a little, maybe there are times when I'll be like, oh, what are you going to do? Go do improv? Because like versus doing something that I'm going to be at or something. So maybe there's another like layer. These relationship issues are.
Are you actually doing improv?
Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
If by actually doing it, do you mean actually doing it nonstop every day?
No, but once in a while you'll go to improv.
Nonstop every day.
Yeah.
Nonstop. Oh, great.
Does it every day. Like us in record stores,
him
in improv.
But you're on stage or you're watching, studying, picking up?
Both. But on stage more now.
Yeah. Oh, good, man.
And he just got a personal invite to the Herald team.
Audition.
Nah,
that's dope. That's just going to make you better in
you
everything
gotta
you do.
You got to come see my show.
Yeah.
Let's make a week of it. I'll come to your party on Monday.
Yes. Whoa.
You come to my show on Friday.
For sure.
They're 4 blocks away from each other.
Oh, yeah, they're
sure.
Right away from each other.
For sure. No, I would love to see what you're doing, dude. I'll probably get inspired with that, too.
I can't. I remember the day we had the conversation with Just Blaze when you got into like that 45 Just Blaze and then Biz talk.
Yep.
I just fucking.
I don't want you to go there anymore. At first I did, and then I realized when I get other people into it, I'm like, what am I doing? I don't want them buying the records. I'll just hate you.
I can't do it.
I'll just end up hating you. What does he want?
Hey, Ian, come in.
Come in. He just comes here and stares and looks this guy.
I know. Why do you stare at us like a fucking psycho?
We're doing a podcast. What do you want?
I'm waiting for you guys.
What, you need to ask us something?
What's up?
No, when you're done. Well,
we're wrapping up right now, so stay right there.
I have to go to my meeting.
We both have to leave. So, hey, Ems, this has been an awesome treat. Thank you for Mobile Mondays.
I want to thank you for giving me my first early Death Row records back in the day.
He sent them to you back in the day.
Well, he sent them to Riz.
You got them.
But I got them.
Yeah, but I think you used to call me as well.
No, that's what I'm saying. I met you through Riz, and you'd send Riz the package, but there'd be extra ones for me. And being an overall cool dude. What else did you do?
What else do you want to thank him? This is really nice. You're getting it all in here in case you never
There's
seen it.
There's something else you did for me that was big in the back in the day. I don't remember what it was.
Jerked you off in the tunnel.
No. That was someone else.
Okay. No, use that story.
That was Puerto Rico Rob.
I thought that was the operator part of it. That was Puerto Rico Rob!
What the fuck did Oh, who cares? Fuck it.
By the way, have you ever considered doing...
I remember when we had a pep talk when he first started making music.
Well, maybe that was it. What was that?
I forgot what it was, but I mean, I know we had like a...
Making beats?
Yeah.
Ugh.
What about...
What a waste.
Yeah, that was the pep talk.
No, no, I was supportive.
Hey, listen, have you
do that?
Have you ever considered taking this 45 thing and turning it into porn and doing like 45 glory hole porn where people put their cock through the hole in the record? I think that would really
not just one record, like a long stack.
A long stack, right? Right,
like and a 15 inch stack of records.
How
turned
big is
sideways.
The penis?
Huh?
That's
no, you don't want to go all the way. You don't want it sticking out the other end.
What do you think? You saying fucking the records?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, glory hole, like the bathroom ones where they have someone sticking their dick through the wall in the bathroom.
Or someone sucks
there's,
on
there's,
it.
There's,
I thought you meant fucking like a cannon of
There's
45.
No way in hell you are going to get me to respond to anything dealing with 45s,
and
porn,
cock.
Your cock.
All right, we're out.
I'm good.